Congressional District Forum featuring the Democratic primary candidates.
This special is presented exclusively by Civic Media on WLCX La Crosse, WCFW HD2 The Tap, Chippewa Falls, WRCE Richland Center, and WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
The first of four forums is being held on the UW Stevens Point campus. Your moderator tonight is William Garcia, chair of the 3rd Congressional District in La Crosse County. Now, let's go live to UW Stevens Point and moderator William Garcia.
CD Democrats of Wisconsin. That means I'm chair of the 18 counties, mostly in western Wisconsin, right across the Mississippi, right on the border of the Mississippi. That make up the 3rd Congressional District. It is our job and our hope to elect Democrats up and down the ballot in 2024 November. So I want to thank you for being here today. It's my pleasure to introduce our moderator. Will Shredder is a graduate of UW Stevens Point. While at school, he served extensively on student government and as student body president. Currently, Will works at University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point in the College of Natural Resources, and he serves as a volunteer for local Boy Scout and Girl Scout troops on the Friends of the Schmeagle Reserve Board and recently elected to the school board in Stevens Point. Ladies and gentlemen, William Shredder.
All right, thank you, William, and thank you all for coming today. I'm rather tall, so we'll see if this works. So this is, again, hosted by the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Party and also the Portage County Democrats. Each candidate will have 1 minute and 30 seconds to answer our questions, along with a 3 minute opening statement. We have drawn names by randomly to see who goes first for that. They will be held up by our wonderful timekeeper, William, right there, for cards. There's also answer or time for possible follow-ups. And then we'll also have a couple of breaks at 7 and at 7:30 for the station ID of the stations that are hosting this for us. So our first person to go for an opening statement will be Rebecca Cook, and I will give it away to you.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I want to start off by thanking our 3rd CD Chair William and the Portage County Democrats for all the work that you put into organizing this forum and the forums across the 3rd Congressional District. I'm Rebecca Cook. I grew up on a dairy farm over in the Eau Claire area. I grew up showing cows in 4-H, but like a lot of Wisconsin farmers, we had to sell our cows because of the price of milk and competition with larger dairies, which was tough, you know, and is a story of a lot of Wisconsin farmers. And it's a key reason why I'm running for Congress, to really take on corporate monopolies that are robbing us of our farming heritage and crippling rural communities. But we're tough, and we pick ourselves up. I worked to put myself through college before coming back home to Eau Claire, where I started my own small business that I ran for 7 years before closing it in 2022, really competing against cheap Chinese goods. I ended up starting my own hospitality business and also run a nonprofit organization that supports women entrepreneurs throughout 19 counties. And I waitress 3 nights a week while I'm running for Congress by day. And you don't see a lot of folks with my kind of background stepping up to run for Congress or in Congress itself. You see a lot of career politicians. You see a lot of elitists. You see a lot of radicals like Derek Van Orden, who is very much a bully. He yells at Senate pages, he reduces librarians to tears, and he lacks the temperament to represent us in Congress. We need someone who's going to reinstill faith in our democracy. And that's another reason why I'm running. We deserve a representative who is a doer, who's going to roll up their sleeves to get things done for folks in western Wisconsin, not start a fistfight with folks that are on, you know, the same party lines or even, you know, across the aisle. I'm going to deliver on kitchen table issues like increasing access to affordable quality health care, taking on corporate monopolies that are price gouging consumers at the gas pump, at the grocery store, and in our housing market. And I'm going to defend reproductive freedoms. I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation tonight and talking about issues that are important to all of us here in the 3rd CD. So thank you.
Thank you. Our next candidate to go for an opening statement is Eric Wilson.
Good evening. Thank you everyone for being here, and thank you, William, for putting everything that you do into the third CD, and it's exciting to be here. My name's Eric Wilson, and I am running because of actually gun violence. November of 2022, there was a shooting at Club Q in Colorado Springs. It was an attack on my LGBTQ community. That was the night that I said, enough is enough, and we deserve better. That was the moment that I was inspired to figure out what I can do and jump into this, because I think we all have that moment. There's a lot of despair out there, but it truly is, what can we do? I come from a family of coaches, teachers, small business owners, just north of Eau Claire, and truly understood the value of helping others and standing with each other. I went to school down in Madison and studied economics. I got some medical issues. I had a reconstructive surgery on my chest, and I got infections in both sides. At 19, I had 11 surgeries under my belt, and I came out of it with medical debt. This system is not set up for us. We are putting children, we are putting young adults in situations where they have to fight for not only their life, but their finances. And we can do better as a society. And so I'm running for Medicare for All because I want to make sure that everyone has the ability to not just survive, but to thrive. It's talking about the difficult issues that are at the forefront of everyone's minds. We can't avoid them any longer. It's talking about responsible gun ownership. It's talking about a ceasefire. It's talking about Medicare for All. It's fighting for our democratic values, which are taking care of people. If we tie everything back to that, that's why I'm in this race, because I care about everyone. And I want to make sure that no one feels isolated like I have had to growing up. I want to make sure that people have what they need to be their best selves and to rebuild Wisconsin's community that we have gotten away from. We should be able to grab a beer and talk about the difficult things and not just fight like Derek makes us. Mm-hmm. And so I'm Eric Wilson, I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to be involved in the conversation about our community here.
Thank you. And our last candidate to give an opening statement is Katrina Shankland.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you so much to 3rd Congressional. It is on. I'm going to start over. Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much to our 3rd CD Democrats, as well as UWSP for hosting us. Thank you to Civic Media for live streaming this. I'm Katrina Shankland, and I'm running for Congress to build on the work we've all done together in the state of Wisconsin. I have been a legislator here in Portage County for the last 12 years, and I've been incredibly proud to represent 60,000 people here in central Wisconsin. And I'm running for Congress now to not only take on Derek Van Orden, but extremists like him in Congress who care more about fighting with each other than they do about fighting for us. I am running to be a voice for all of us, to make government work for us. We have a congressional session right now that is the least productive since the Great Depression, because House Republicans, led by chaotic and extremist Derek Van Orden, are getting in the news for all the wrong reasons, whether it's screaming at U.S. Capitol pages or screaming during an intelligence briefing. We need smart, tough, experienced, and battle-tested candidates from every district in our country to take on the serious, pressing problems that keep the people of Wisconsin up at night. In the state legislature, I've represented a purple district. I've won 6 elections. I've outperformed the top of the ticket every time. In 2022, I was the Democrat who got the most votes. Why is that important here in Portage County? Because we get one shot at taking out a radical extremist like Derek Van Orden, who compared abortion to genocide and wants to take away even more of our rights, like repealing the Affordable Care Act. So I am running to be a champion, not only for our democracy and freedoms, but to codify Roe v. Wade into law, to make sure that all of you have a voice in government, whether it's about Social Security and making Medicare and the Affordable Care Act work even more for folks, or whether it's protecting and holding the lines on our voting rights, our freedoms. And you can count on that, because I've already done that here in the state. I've passed 225 bills into law, all while serving in the minority. And you can take that to the bank. So I'm excited to be here tonight and looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you. All right, now we're going to move into our questions. We have 10 total questions. We'll see if we can get to all of them tonight. As a reminder, each question, you will have 90 seconds, which I'm sure is plenty of time to answer these very complex issues that we're facing as a nation. I'm just going to take these names and pick a random one, and then we'll just go clockwise from there. Rebecca, you get to start. Our first question is about national paid leave. Will you support a national sick leave law that covers all workers?
The answer is yes. When you have a sick family member or you're expecting, I was actually just talking with my mom preparing for tonight, and she was reminding me of when my grandfather was sick and needing to take time off work to be able to care for him. And I'm supportive of the Family Medical Leave Act, but this is also not a one-size-fits-all policy. So thinking about how we can get not just our largest employers, but small and mid-sized businesses to be able to adopt policies like that, I think is really important. And that's in contrast to someone like Derek Van Orden, who has so many anti-worker, anti-family policies. I'm going to be working to deliver for those very types of things when I'm in Congress.
Thank you. Eric Wilson?
Yes, absolutely. It's pretty simple, I think. It's very common sense, though. We need to be supporting people. We are not machines. Maybe some of us, but we might be getting there. But we're not machines, and we need time off. And so that should just be across the board. I mean, we need to be able to go to the doctor's appointments. We need to be able to take care of family members. We need to be able to live. And it's pretty common sense. Like, I mean, I can go on and on about it, but it's straightforward of, yes, absolutely. And we need to expand and not just give it the little basics of, say, a week. Like, we should have 2 to 3 to 4 weeks worth of leave to be able to take care of the ones that we love and ourselves.
Thank you. Katrina Shankland.
So the United States is one of the few industrialized countries in the world that doesn't have a paid family leave program. And we know that only about 25% of folks who are privately employed have access to any kind of paid family leave through their employer. In fact, recently we saw an organizing campaign at UW System specifically for paid family leave. One of the UW System regents said he had no idea they weren't already eligible for family leave that was paid. And that really speaks to the crux of the issue. We need champions who understand that it isn't just about saying yes, but it's about knowing the Build Back Better Act, which passed the House but not the Senate component specifically, had paid family leave in it, 12 weeks. And unfortunately, some Democratic senators decided that that was too much for them. And I think we need champions who are willing to say, hey, when you're sick, when you have a baby, when you have to be a caregiver while also holding your job because you're the breadwinner for your family, you deserve several weeks or months of paid family leave. And on the state level, I was an author of a bill for years to create an insurance program specifically to help people pay in for their paid family leave. And I'll be a champion on this as well as earned sick days in Congress.
Thank you. And I actually do have a follow-up to that one. So it's easy to promise something, but how would you go about getting that done in Congress? And we'll just start with Rebecca again.
How would I go about getting that done in Congress?
Yes.
Like I said, I support bills like the Family Medical Leave Act, and that's something that I would be supportive of and vote for.
Thank you. Eric?
Yeah, the legislation is there. We just need the votes. And so, like, it's working with our colleagues, it's working with people to push them over the edge to get it across the line. Like, and so, yes, it's building a coalition of people that understand that this is what we need to have a thriving economy, country, humanity. So it's getting people on board. The legislation is there.
Thank you. And Katrina.
I think recognizing that there are several bills out there, U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York has a paid family leave and medical act, as well as the Build Back Better Act, which I mentioned. There is specifically a paid family leave program enacted by the House but not concurred on by the Senate in Congress. And where was the sticking point? It was U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat. That really speaks to when we choose in Democratic primaries to vote for our values, we should be asking clear questions like, do you support paid family leave or not? And how are you going to get it done? And I will be that champion.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to our second question. And Eric, you will start with this one. The second question is about child care. The child tax credit had a notable positive effect on children and young families while it was in place post-pandemic. We are coming to recognize the critical need of young families to have improved access to child care services in our communities. According to the U.S. Census, in our county, as in Portage County, there are 1,440 children under the age of 4, and there are only 300 licensed daycare slots. Mm-hmm. This shortage of licensed daycare is an issue typically of greatest impact on women. Has your campaign offered a position or plan that might improve these circumstances that are keeping women from the workplace?
Yes, we need to be advocating for everyone. We started kindergarten here in Wisconsin, and so it's continuing on fighting back to what we started. It's making sure that after there is paid maternity leave, we are giving all children the opportunity that they need. It's, Roe was talking about, you can tell by the age of 6 if someone will end up going to college or not. And so it's making sure that we are putting it, we can do it. We can put it in place to make sure that there is childcare until there is preschool and moving on. It not only helps our economy, it allows people to, all families, to have the opportunity to be working, to do what they want to do. Childcare currently is not only inaccessible, it's unaffordable. I mean, you're paying a college tuition for children, and it's not sustainable for families. It's, for people my age, it's a big deterrent of having kids because we simply can't afford them. But as a community, as a society, we can afford it, and that's how we help invest in younger generations and continuing to build our communities.
Thank you. Katrina?
I have supported Wisconsin's child care counts, which was funded by the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA dollars. Governor Tony Evers put in $340 million every 2 years until this most recent budget, since the pandemic, when child care really became access became even more exacerbated than usual. We saw that without child care counts, which raised wages for our early childhood educators, 40% of child care providers in Wisconsin would have either shut their doors altogether or raised tuition to the point of unaffordability to many working families. I have a constituent who told me she's a dentist in a rural community. She has 3 kids, 1 on the way. She can't find a child care slot for the baby. So that dentist will be forced to shut her doors if she can't find the childcare slot. And all those working families who are waiting for that dental appointment months, if not a year, will be forced to find new ways to make things work too. So this has rippling effects not only on the care economy, but the entire economy. I would champion not only supporting a federal block grant for additional support like child care counts, but there are a number of bills, including the child tax credit, that I've supported on both the state level and voted for it, as well as would support in Congress. And I'm going to work really hard to not only work with employers, but employees to make sure that we have affordable childcare as well as well-paid childcare providers so everyone has access to childcare.
Thank you. And Rebecca.
You know, I think that the pandemic really put a magnifying glass on the childcare issues that we have in this district and across the country. When I was running for Congress last cycle, I had an opportunity to sit down with some childcare providers in Black River Falls, all independent providers that were providing out of their home and coming together to create a childcare cooperative so that they could make higher wages as providers and also offer more services. I also met with some folks in La Crosse that had an interesting approach, a cooperative model of bringing small businesses together. A lot of times you see larger businesses have the capacity to offer childcare for their employers. And I'm interested in these kind of innovative ideas from people within their own communities that are seeing these challenges and coming together and thinking about how can we get more federal funding to back some of these issues. This is also, you know, it's a workforce issue. Then this is what we talked about, in particular, keeping women out of the workforce. I'm somebody that is supportive of the child care tax credit, and there's been opportunities for extension of that, but those are the types of exact bills that Derek Van Orden has not been supporting, but that you can count on me to support when I'm in Congress.
Thank you. Our next question is about the border, the U.S.-Mexico border, which we love to talk about here in Wisconsin for some reason. And our first candidate to talk about that will be Katrina Shankland. Our current congressman has stated, the crisis at the southern border is Biden-made and Biden-manufactured. Among other things, he suggests building a border wall and ending catch and release. Most do agree that something needs to be done to address this crisis. What recommendations would you suggest and be willing to support to tackle border control?
This is why people hate politicians, because people like Derek Van Orden chose to reject a bipartisan deal that was compromised in good faith upon both Democrats and Republicans, as well as President Biden, who was prepared to sign it. And it really shows that he is not fit to serve us in Congress when he is prepared to reject a deal. And he had the power to not only marshal more resources to our U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents, but also he had the ability with his one vote to support ending the trafficking of fentanyl into our communities across Wisconsin and the country. And I'll tell you, if there's a bipartisan compromise that seems right for Wisconsin and right for working families and seniors and right for the country, I'll vote for it. Unlike Derek Van Orden, who chooses to spend most of his time on Twitter getting into fights with his constituents and calling people names, I think we need real leaders who are focused on delivering solutions. My dad immigrated here in the 80s. That's the last time we had comprehensive immigration reform. And it's because radical and reckless politicians like Derek Van Orden that were unable to move the needle. I'm a problem solver, and I'm always willing to reach my hand across the aisle on real issues like this. And you can count on me to not only advocate for real solutions, but to call out any politician who chooses to play politics with people's lives and with our security.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
For years, we've seen Congress take a patchwork approach to comprehensive immigration reform. I've had an opportunity to build relationships with folks in Arcadia, farm workers in our agricultural industry, as well as many folks who are part of our manufacturing industry that are migrant workers. And, you know, I think that it's important to secure the border, but also important to recognize what a key part of the workforce that migrant workers are and figuring out how we can have a pathway to citizenship. These are folks that are hard workers that have been paying into a system that they're not seeing the benefits from. And I think it takes people that are willing to work across the aisle to get this done. You know, there has been policy that's been put forth that's bipartisan that Democrats came to the table for, but then Republicans took away because they wanted it to be a talking point for Donald Trump's campaign. And we need people that aren't always going to toe the party line, but that are going to get things done. And, you know, I think really we need to have comprehensive immigration reform to pull folks out of the shadows and to be a part of the communities that they're continuing to contribute to.
Thank you. And Eric Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, Derek's unhinged about this topic. But it does bring to light something. We need to make sure that we are securing the border. And it actually brings up a good point of we need to be making sure that we have an immigration system and a border that is keeping human life in mind. We shouldn't be caging children. We shouldn't be putting people into camps. We should be doing the systematic thing to actually get the reform and have a system that is acceptable in a timely manner, right? Like, you shouldn't have to wait 10 years just to start the process. That's part of the issue with this. And so I am for a bipartisan bill. I'm making sure that we are doing this reform. I am for making sure that we don't have fentanyl coming across the southern border. I am for abolishing ICE. I want to make sure that we are doing things to rebuild families, not tear them apart. Immigration is needed in this country. We have sectors that absolutely require agriculture, hospitality. We need to have an acceptable system to make sure that these communities and these industries are able to not just survive. We need to move forward quickly in creating it.
Thank you. And Katrina. Or did we go already? My bad. Sorry. We make mistakes. So our next question is about inflation, and we will start with Rebecca Cook. Inflation rose last month. Some things we can help to control and some things we don't have control over as a government or a potential congressperson. What are some things that you can do, however, to help control higher costs for individuals with everyday needs such as food and energy? Take it away.
Absolutely. This is something that I understand all too well, having been a small business owner and really having had to grapple with a lot of the rising costs and the ways that they impacted my small business. And what it really comes down to is having a backbone in Congress and taking on corporations that are price gouging consumers off the backs of their workers. You're hearing so much about these reports of these record profits that corporations are having. And we need to have legislators who are willing to step up to enforce antitrust legislation. You see a hyper consolidation in so many different industries, in agriculture where there's four main, meat processors. And so, thinking about how can we enforce those antitrust laws and not cozying up to special interests like someone like Derek Van Orden is doing and taking dollars from big corporate interests in voting in support of bills that are important to them. And that's not something that I'll ever do. And as somebody that's ran a small business and somebody that understands what working families need in West Central Wisconsin.
Thank you. Eric Wilson.
Yeah, having an economics background, I understand where and how we got here. Big corporations do not care. They are in it just for their bottom line. They have equity companies coming in where they strip everything out, they raise the prices, and then they drop out. It is all just flowing to the top. And so it's making sure that we have antitrust laws, that we are breaking up big corporations. We will systematically always move back to consolidation because there is economies of scale. And so it is the role of our government and the role of elected officials to make sure that we are putting the guardrails in place to break them up when they get too big. Because at that point, they set their prices, right? We're seeing it in housing. We're seeing it in agriculture, in food, in everything. And so it's breaking it up. It's also fixing our tax system and making sure that corporations have a progressive tax. I mean, that will help control some of these issues.
Thank you. And Katrina Shanklin.
Is it inflation or is it greedflation? We've also heard shrinkflation, but I prefer greedflation because the vast majority of these, what current companies are calling, inflation are actually coming. If you look at the last few quarters, they're almost entirely related to corporate greed. And that's important because it means we can do something about it. When they say it's supply chain issues and we look into it and it's actually not, we know that they're just using consumers to continue to get wealthier while hoping that you'll have cereal for dinner, like one CEO recently said, because of the cost of groceries. I have constituents, I saw one in the last two weeks, who brought up the cost of meat. She knows it by the penny. She knows the cost of milk and eggs by the penny. You know why? Because she is tracking when and how she can finally afford to get hamburger. That's not okay. We have work to do as a country. And here's what we can do, and I'm really excited about it, because our U.S. Senator, Tammy Baldwin, is taking the lead on this with other great senators like Elizabeth Warren. There is a bill specifically to empower and help the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, to enforce price gouging laws. We need consumer protections. We need watchdogs, people who will have your back every day of the week. And that's something I've committed to because representing you all here in Central Wisconsin, I know what we're up against and I know what it's going to take to get things done in Congress because the powerful special interests sure like to hand out money to people who want to be their lackeys, and I'm not one of them.
Thank you. And just to fill out some time before our ID read, I'll ask a small follow-up here. So this inflation issue really hurts municipalities, school districts, and counties. So real quick, what can you do as a congressperson to help those issues?
Starting with me?
Yes, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think that there's a way in which we can allocate federal dollars to be able to support small municipalities. We have a large budget to be able to work with, to be able to send those types of resources to West Central Wisconsin. So I think there's a lot of opportunities to be able to do that.
Thank you. Eric?
Yeah, I mean, it's also energy. Energy is a huge inflator of this, and so it's making sure that we are putting caps on things and giving, right, like it's a needed good, and so it's enforcing what we already have.
Thank you. And Katrina?
I agree that inflationary costs like energy and healthcare are really hurting our municipal governments and counties, but I also know that the state is not paying its fair share to our local municipalities. That's why in the legislature I championed our new shared revenue law. So every penny on the nickel goes to every town, village, city, and county in the state of Wisconsin for specifically core government services like waste removal, infrastructure, courts, and public safety. I'm proud to have championed that. I'm proud to have stood alongside Governor Evers as he signed it into law. I'm going to be an equal partner in Congress so that our local governments don't have to decide between pay cuts and ending services.
All right, thank you. And the station read is doing its thing now, so we're just going to wait for a couple of minutes.
You're listening to a live broadcast of the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Primary Candidate Forum. Stay with us for more live coverage from UW Stevens Point. You're listening to special coverage on WLCX La Crosse, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, WRCE Richland Center, and WFHR Wisconsin Rapids. This is Civic Media. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I went to go see The Queen of My Dreams, which is a beautiful film about a mother-daughter relationship. So funny, so beautiful, so heartfelt. Would highly recommend it.
And that concludes our Monday morning segment of Here's How Pat Kreitlow is an Uncultured Slob. You are cultured, man. You are a big old cup of yogurt over there. I mean, we're talking some fruit on the bottom over there.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Back together, the station read has been read, and we will continue with our questions. So we will start with Eric for this question, and this question is about agriculture. Family farms have been disappearing across Wisconsin and especially across the 3rd Congressional District. If elected, what would you do to address these challenges and support our Wisconsin farming tradition?
It's making sure we pass a farm bill. And it's also making sure that we are building the infrastructure for our farmers, right? Like we can do things, climate change is real. I'll make that statement, and it's coming. And so it's how are we going to help our farmers prepare for it? How do we help reduce costs for our farmers? It's things such as making sure that the tax credits are extended where they can get solar on their farms to reduce their bills. It's making sure that we are providing options so they can work sustainably and aren't just stuck doing one crop. It's making sure that we have the financing in place for young and people that want to start small farms. It's very difficult to start a new farm. And so we have to be providing options for people to be able to do so and making sure that we aren't just having international companies or international individuals coming in and buying our farmland, big companies here, or like we need to be protecting and making sure that we are enforcing antitrust and giving everyone the opportunity here that wants it to farm, because it's part of Wisconsin. It's part of who we are. My brother-in-law is a dairy farmer, and they just had to sell their cows. And it gets into this same thing that Rebecca's been talking about, is we need to provide support. And if elected, I will make sure that everyone has that support.
Thank you. Katrina.
In the legislature, In the legislature, I've worked on a number of issues related to agriculture as a proud member of the Agriculture Committee and representing Portage County. I have the experience to get things done. Just today, the Dairy Business Association named me with their Legislative Excellence Award for the 2023-24 session because I champion family farmers every day of the week, unlike Derek Van Worden, who he and his party want to gut $20 billion out of the farm bill in conservation. Contrast that with me. This guy's never passed a bill through the Agriculture Committee. I serve on the Agriculture Committee as a Democrat in the minority. I've passed 3 new laws to support farmers with conservation, put more money in their pockets, keep soil on the ground, and make sure that we're protecting our precious water quality, both surface and groundwater. So you can count on me to do that in Congress, to work hard for a farm bill that prioritizes family farmers and farmers who want to stay the same size instead of continuing to grow because of the rise of monopolies. We've seen that tremendously in agriculture. Family farmers are facing a lot of pressure right now. I want to help them. I also want to help new and beginning farmers. I've introduced legislation with my colleagues in the State House to help them with a tax credit. I want to champion that in Congress too. It's not easy to be a farmer. The best thing we can do is try to make it easier for them as policymakers. That's what I've done with the experience in the Capitol. I'll take that with me to Congress to continue supporting our farmers.
Thank you. And Rebecca.
Yeah, this is an issue that's very personal to me, as we're one of the many farms in Wisconsin that had to sell our cows because of the price of milk and in competition with larger dairies. And we've got a farm bill right now that really works to support agricultural conglomerates and doesn't pay a whole heck of a lot of attention to small and mid-sized farms. I think it's important to also recognize what's happening in our country, where there's a lot of foreign nationals that are coming in to buy our land. Which presents a real challenge from a national security perspective, from a food security perspective, and from an industry perspective, for having folks come in to do that. And then we have somebody like Derek Van Orden, who has self-proclaimed himself as the cheese king in Congress, yet has failed to get a farm bill passed, and is taking a lot of those special interest dollars from those corporate ag businesses that have put family farms like mine, out of business. And I think it's important that we consider, opening up trade routes to other countries. There's been a statement by Derek Van Orden equating trade to China, like trading with the Nazis. I think it's important for us to be expanding trade routes here in the U.S.
All right, thank you. Our next question is about drinking water, and we will start with Katrina Shankland. Many families in the 3rd Congressional District can no longer trust that the water from their tap is safe due to nitrate and PFAS levels over the government standard. If elected, what would you do to help these families and address clean drinking water?
This has been the issue that I've been the most passionate about here in Portage County as a state legislator with experience getting things done. I have launched a $10 million grant program for seniors, working families, and businesses all over Wisconsin who can't drink from their contaminated wells. If you have a private well because of nitrate, PFAS, bacteria, radium, arsenic, and other contaminants, you are eligible as long as your household income is under 100K, because I worked with Governor Evers to get that done. That means that at least 600 families in Wisconsin can now drink water from their taps. So remediation first, prevention concurrently. I launched a nitrate optimization program that the DBA actually just today heralded as a great leadership opportunity for farmers to help them manage their commercial fertilizer loading, so that way we can prevent water quality issues and contamination from happening altogether. That's extremely costly, not only to taxpayers, but to our public health. And here in central Wisconsin, we feel that 1 in 4 folks cannot drink water from their private wells. I want to marshal federal resources, building on the progress Democrats made with the infrastructure laws, to support communities like the town of Campbell
in French Island in western Wisconsin who can't drink water from their taps because of PFAS to get the drinking water treatment that they need. But I also want to expand that even further for nitrate contamination, because regardless of contaminant, every person in Wisconsin deserves to drink water from their taps.
Thank you. And Rebecca Cook.
PFAS are a real issue here in the 3rd Congressional District and throughout western Wisconsin, especially in particular in French Island, where they're getting water bottles brought in to drink out of. This is in 2024. In Eau Claire, we have issues in our own well system. I know Chuck is here from Friendship, and there's issues there in those municipalities, and we've got to call for more research, testing, and remediation. And it's something that these small municipalities are not going to be able to do on their own, talking about that from the prior question. It's going to take federal funding to really tackle this. Eau Claire is looking at a $20 million price tag to remediate this in our city wells, and has gotten just $2 million allocated to them at the federal level. So I'm somebody that is a huge proponent of this and want to get things done, and it takes having somebody that's willing to talk about water quality at the congressional level and work to get those resources moved to our communities.
Thank you. And Eric Wilson.
Well, we are 60% water, so I would say water is pretty important. And it's making sure that we are protecting it as well. It's not only the remedying of PFAS and other nitrates in our water, it's making sure that we are systematically doing it from the start to the finish. Look, it's also making sure that we are getting people money to get rid of old lead pipes, and making sure that we are investing in the infrastructure across our cities. In my hometown, they're having to tear up all of the roads so that they can replace the pipes because they put it off for 20 years. That is not uncommon. It's something that we're going to have to do. And so it's not just the filtration systems. It's a lot of infrastructure stuff and replacing pipes that we're going to have to work on as well. Look, any amount of poison is poison. And so we can't have different levels of poison in our water. And so it's making sure that we have all of the necessary resources so that everyone has safe water. If we don't have water, we don't have life. And so we need to throw everything at it.
All right, thank you. Our next question, we will start with Rebecca Cook, and this is about higher education and higher education costs. The 3rd Congressional District is home to 6 universities, more than any other congressional district in the state of Wisconsin, and our universities are struggling. UW-Platteville has closed its branch campus at Richland Center. UW-Eau Claire and UW-Stevens Point are considering closures of their branches, and many of our universities in the district are facing structural deficits. In addition, student loans continue to be a top issue for young people in Wisconsin. As a member of Congress, what would you do to address these issues?
So I'm somebody that has benefited through FAFSA with the support of Pell Grants to be able to go to college, but I also worked 3 jobs while going to college. And we need to, as a Congress, work to address higher education. And it's not just a Band-Aid solution. It's really looking structurally at a lot of these predatory lending programs that are putting students in these situations to begin with. And it's also, you know, encouraging students to other alternate paths towards the middle class. We, you know, in addition to the 6 college campuses and universities we have in this district, we have a robust technical education system, you know, looking at apprenticeships and associate degrees. And so presenting alternatives to students to be able to pursue, I think, is important as well.
All right. Thank you. Eric Wilson.
Higher education?
Yes.
Make it free. We need to. Like, if I am elected, I will make sure that we are making our higher education, our tech schools, we need to be funding public education. We will fall behind as a country if we don't completely invest in education. It's our future. And so it's making sure that we not only have the schools, we have student loans. It is a big burden on all of us. Everyone that has student loans. And if we unlock that, if we get rid of the student debt, it opens up a whole new world of people to go into the workforce and not have to worry about them being saddled by this weight. They can buy a house, they can buy a new car. We open up a whole new economic future if we're willing to invest in our kids, in our society. I would love to go back to school. I would love to get a master's degree in psychology. And that's limiting to people when you know that there are thousands and thousands of dollars of debt that you're gonna have to go in. I worked during school as well, and you just can't cut it. You can't make enough money to pay your own way through school. And so it's not only that you're working a job, you're figuring out who you are as a person, which is a lot of work, and also trying to get grades. We shouldn't be forcing people to take 18 credits, have two jobs, and try to survive for 4 years to get through. We should be investing in it.
Thank you, and Katrina Shanklin.
Access and affordability both are key, and here in Wisconsin, we have a gem in both our UW system and our Wisconsin Technical College system. I've had a bill package for years called Reaching Higher for Higher Education, which I developed and introduced in close partnership with faculty, staff, and students at our UW system campuses. Last night, I was in Northern Grant County talking to folks from all over the area that UW-Richland Center used to cover. Its doors closed, so did four other campuses are on track to out of our 26. Access and affordability are important. We can't even talk about financial aid and affordability if we don't have campuses that are open. I'm deeply concerned at the Republican attacks on public higher education funding, and I have witnessed them firsthand in the Capitol and stood strong against them, especially here when UW Stevens Point was attacked. You can count on that same level of ferocity when it comes to protecting public education at all levels, from pre-K early childhood to our public schools, to our higher education. And here's where the federal government can make a difference, whether it's funding IDEA for our public schools or whether it's supporting our public higher education institutions with not just financial aid but additional support like they did during the pandemic to help them keep their doors open. That's something I'm going to champion, because I have noticed it's rural communities that suffer the most when these doors shut down. I'm worried about places like River Falls and Platteville and Stevens Point and Menominee and La Crosse and Eau Claire, and you can count on me to continue worrying and be your advocate in Congress.
Thank you. Our next question will start with Eric Wilson. This one is about affordable health care. Medical costs and prescription drug prices continue to climb. Many communities across western and central Wisconsin are facing hospital closures and lack of access to medical care. How would you address this issue as a member of Congress?
Medicare for all. If we are not fighting for Medicare for all, we are not supporting our democratic values of taking care of everyone. Right? It solves a lot of the issues that we have. It ensures that we have access in rural communities. It ensures that you don't have to go to the pharmacy and play roulette on which drugs you can afford or not afford. It ensures that people can get the preventative care and abortion care that they need. It's ensuring that we're not robots. We need healthcare, and it's much cheaper if we do preventative rather than reactionary. We shouldn't have to choose between our health or our pocketbook. And so not pushing for Medicare for all is a disservice to everyone. And so I am an advocate, and I'm the only one here that is pushing to get us there, because we deserve it.
Thank you. Katrina Shanklin.
So this question relates to an issue in the Chippewa Valley. Both Chippewa Falls and Eau Claire had hospitals shut down, the emergency departments, oncology, and so much more are in disarray and chaos, and there was very little warning. 1,400 people lost their jobs. 500 oncology patients are driving an hour away to access care, while the birthing center in Eau Claire is no longer an option, and people are also having to figure out where to go. That is not acceptable, and we need to work on every level of government to make sure that A, this never happens again, and B, recognizing that 30% of rural hospitals in this country are in the same boat, where their costs are not matching their revenues. And so one of the big issues here in Wisconsin, we're one of just a handful of states left that haven't accepted the Medicaid reimbursement. Why is that important? We forfeited $2 billion over the last decade because of Republican inaction and dysfunction. Why is that important? That $2 billion could have been reinvested in raising Medicaid reimbursement rates, which would have kept our providers' doors open. I've heard this all over the 3rd Congressional District. People are deeply worried, not only about having affordable health care, but having a hospital, an emergency room, a provider's doors to walk into when you're sick, when you're expecting, when you need preventative care, when you need dental care. All of these things matter. I have the experience working on healthcare in the Capitol to bring that knowledge with me to Washington and fight hard against special interests to make sure we're protecting rural healthcare access across Wisconsin.
Thank you. And Rebecca Cook.
Increasing healthcare access and affordability is a top priority of mine. If you visit my issues page on my website, it's at the very top. I have aging parents that, go to Mexico on their once a year. They go down there to get their dental work done because it's cheaper to do there than it is in our own country. And I want to expand Medicare to cover vision, dental, and hearing, the very things that deteriorate as folks age. I think the Affordable Care Act was a start. I think there's a lot of improvements that we need to make it stronger. My dad was recently diagnosed with cancer at the beginning, actually, of my campaign. And he went in to get his prescription drugs for the first time. $1,300 copay for a one-month supply of one drug. $1,800 for another, which is astronomical. And you've got politicians that are lining their pockets with special interest dollars while their constituents are suffering in that kind of way. Katrina mentioned the hospital crisis in Eau Claire, which is my hometown. I'm very familiar with that. Was out talking with workers that had lost their jobs, many with no notice. And so I've worked to connect with folks at Gunderson Healthcare, Marshfield Clinics, to really understand some of the issues that their healthcare systems are facing to keep some of our smaller clinics and hospitals fully funded and open. This is in contrast to Derek Van Orden, who, if you go to his website, has a one-sentence healthcare policy, which is to repeal Obamacare with nothing to replace it. And that's who we have representing us in Congress right now.
All right, thank you. And I think we're actually ahead of time, which is insane for a forum. So good job for being short-winded politicians. I think I'm going to give you a minute for follow-up questions. So one of my follow-up questions for this is regarding insurance. Even if you do have insurance through your workplace or Medicaid or Medicare, for example, even then you have astronomical costs, prescription drugs, you might be denied coverage. So what can we do and what can you do as potential congresspeople to address that issue? And we'll start with Eric again.
Yeah, having worked in the medical insurance industry, I understand the inside of the beast. I understand there are teams in place to deny expensive claims. And so there is a lot of special interest money that does not want us to move to a Medicare for all system because that's where they are making their money. It's their cash cow. And so how do we fix it? We have to get them out of the middle of it. And that, by coming together and having one system, we have negotiating power. We can push back on pharmacies. We know how much things are going to cost. We don't have to go to the doctor and guess. We can have impact assessments. We can make sure that every area has the right amount of MRIs, that they have the right amount of emergency care, mental health. We can fix a lot of these issues if we get insurance out of the way. They have a place, right? Like, we still have to process the information and make sure that people are getting their prescriptions, but they don't need to be running our system.
All right, thank you. Katrina Shankland.
I don't hear from many people who think that their insurance plan is affordable. So even though we have great programs that have increased the amount of people who are covered by insurance plans, we have a lot more work to do in this country and in this state to make it truly affordable for everyone. I want to build on the work of the Inflation Reduction Act. There are some key programs in there that I think Democrats did a great job with. They could have gone even further, had just a few Democrats who stood in their way, listened to their constituents, and really worked hard to crack down on the overpriced big pharma. So one of the things I think is a tax credit specifically for the Affordable Care Act. subsidies, which are going to expire in 2025. Another piece, expanding on the Medicare negotiation for pharmaceutical companies and really working to close a donut hole, not only on Part D, but cracking down on scam plans. So I want to work not only on Medicare, but Medicaid reimbursement rates, as I said earlier. And I also want to make sure our Affordable Care Act is truly affordable for everyone. And finally, championing, making sure Wisconsin finally expands Medicaid.
Thank you, and Rebecca Cook.
So I actually get my healthcare through the marketplace, and it's always been catastrophic insurance. It never covers much, and every time that I go to the doctor, I'm always paying out of pocket. I actually went to urgent care a couple of months ago, and I have an $1,800 bill to pay from that. So I understand these issues very much firsthand, and I think that the Affordable Care Act did a lot to expand healthcare coverage in our country, but I think there's a lot of states that chose not to pick up pieces of it. You know, we have a lot of oligopolies of insurance that really exist, especially here in Wisconsin, and it takes somebody that's going to take on, you know, some of those pharmaceutical as well as insurance companies that, you know, I think are taking advantage of consumers.
All right, thank you. Our next question, we will start with Katrina Shankland. This concerns Native Americans and Native peoples. The 3rd Congressional District is home to the Ho-Chunk Nation and many other Native American communities. These communities are often uniquely challenged by issues such as broadband access, climate change, or environmental degradation. How would you support the Native Americans and work with Native nations as a member of Congress?
Wisconsin is special. We are home to 11 federally recognized tribes and several other tribes too, and one of my favorite days in the state capitol as a legislator is the State of the Tribes Address, where we get to hear directly from a tribal leader about the issues most important to them. When I first ran for Congress, one of my first calls was to the Ho-Chunk Nation president, one of our own here in Portage County, John Greendeer, because I knew I wanted to be a partner with our tribes every day of the week. And I have participated and been honored to participate in a tribal consultation at Ho-Chunk Nation as Governor Evers' only legislator appointed to the Green Ribbon Commission. We're working together on expanding sustainable energy access for them, which is a very complicated issue as it relates to tribal land and the tax credits that are available. So here's what I'm learning. Not only is Wisconsin special and home to 11 federally recognized tribes, but we have work to do as a state and federal government to build and deepen our relationship and support not only their leadership, but their key issues. And I want to be an equal partner with them in Congress, just as I have been in the state legislature.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
So this past fall, I was honored to be invited by the Ho-Chunk Nation to their Labor Day powwow. It was actually a 90-degree day, so I was one of the only elected, candidates and elected officials to turn up. But it was a really, really powerful day, getting to build relationships with President Greendeer, as well as other members of the Ho-Chunk Nation. And, you know, I know that tribal sovereignty is a top issue at a federal level for them to retain their inherent powers of self-government. I also know things like cultural preservation is so important to tribal members, and being able to participate in something like that, like a powwow, really opened my eyes to that and how important it is to supporting those types of things, as well as being a steward for our natural resources, clean air, water, protecting our land, and those are things that I'm looking forward to being a partner with the Ho-Chunk Nation on, as well as continuing from a federal level to be able to help fund healthcare systems as well as housing initiatives within the tribe.
Thank you, and Eric Wilson.
Yeah, it's making sure that we're continuing to respect sovereignty and understanding that they are equals in how we are working on things. It's making sure that they also have the resources that they need to build thriving communities. It's making sure that we're investing in clean energy. I know there's a lot of big initiatives that help them be sustainable. It's investing in their education system, their healthcare system. They are part of our community. They are respected members, and we also have to continue to show up. It's showing up. When we were in Black River Falls for the third convention, I was one of the only people that went to the coalition event and making sure that we were talking to, it was Peggy Flanagan was there And sharing about how we are building and investing in our communities, not just here, but across our district, across our state, and across our nation. And so it's respect and showing up.
Thank you. And then just as a follow-up before our station ID, and we'll start again with Katrina for this question. It can be kind of difficult to make sure that Native voices are heard at the table when we're discussing things like pipelines, clean energy, water, clean water, even stuff like that, like the other questions we've had before. So how would you, as a member of Congress, ensure that they are included in these conversations in the nation's capital?
I really appreciate that follow-up question because that's integral to good leadership and good government. When we exclude voices, especially voices like our tribal nations, we really devalue them. And I have seen Governor Evers take a massive leadership role on the state level by really doing much more than previous governors have. And I want to be a model public servant like him as your member of Congress. I want to have the same level of tribal consultations and meetings on every issue, whether it's sustainable agriculture, energy, housing, healthcare, and more. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook?
Yeah, I think it's building deep relationships and doing that, whether it's an election year or not, right? And inviting people to be a part of roundtables and discussions about issues that impact all of us, and in particular with tribal nations. And I think it's inviting folks to have those conversations. Like I mentioned, I've built some really strong relationships with the Ho-Chunk Nation here within our district, and it's continuing to bring them to the table to host roundtables and things like that.
Thank you. And Eric Wilson.
Yeah, it's both. It's making sure that we are showing up and understanding how important things are to them, making sure that we are respecting their way of life. And it's also always having a seat at my table. Like, they will always have an opportunity to share where they're at, share where they want to go in the future, and share what issues are important to them. And so my commitment is they will always have a seat.
Thank you. And we're just going to wait for the ad read.
You're listening to a live broadcast of the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Primary Candidate Forum. Stay with us for more live coverage from UW Stevens Point. The Todd Alba Show.
State Senator Kelda Royce in Richland County. UW System made the unilateral decision to completely vacate the campus by July 1st of this year.
It's so short-sighted to think it costs a little bit more money to run it and there aren't as many students, so let's just shut it down. A smart business owner would say now is the time to invest because we know every person that comes through the door, you're going to get 40-fold the investment from how they're going to be able to give back to our state.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. You're listening to special coverage on WLCX La Crosse, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, WRCE Richland Center, and WFHR Wisconsin Rapids. This is Civic Media. Nightline with Pete Schwaba.
In honor of National Cheeseball Day, what food totally disgusts you? For me, it's anything where cheese is crammed together and soft. Why you would put it all into a ball or a log or a loaf, I don't understand. What about you, Conrad? You got a disgusting food?
I like tuna. It just can't be from in a can. It just has the worst smell in me. I just think it's nasty.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Just want to make sure. So, this question concerns Roe v. Wade. The overturn of Roe v. Wade has left Wisconsin in a legal limbo in regards to reproductive health care access, and there are now actions being taken against contraceptive care and IVF treatments. What is your opinion on these issues, and what would you do about them if elected?
Thanks for the question. This is a top motivator for a lot of folks in this district and around the country. When Roe v. Wade was overturned last cycle when I was running for Congress, I talked with a good friend of mine that I went to high school with who was expecting and ended up having to have an abortion during her labor and delivery. And the doctor had to pause to take a phone call to figure out if he or she would be arrested for performing the procedure. Which is ridiculous that that was in 2022, but in 2024, that's the state of reproductive rights in our country. And as a member of Congress, I'm gonna fight like hell to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law. It's not my position to be in a doctor's office making choices for you and your family about your health care, nor has it been for many, many years, right? This is in contrast to Derek Van Orden, who has at points called for a nationwide abortion ban. I think this is one of those top issues that you'll see so many Democrats obviously agree on, and the alternative with the far right is incredibly detrimental and dangerous.
Thank you. Eric Wilson?
Yes, it's very straightforward. I will fight to codify this into law at a federal perspective. As a man, I have no say in this. We should not be making decisions for women. It is their choice. It is a body autonomy issue, and making sure that that decision is not mine. It is between her, her family, and her doctor. And so I will keep it very simple, but I stand by women in making sure that we need to fight for your rights. We need to fight for you and make sure that you have the right to your own body.
Thank you, and Katrina Shanklin.
When we flip the House blue, the next thing we're gonna do is codify Roe v. Wade into law, and we're not gonna stop there. We need federal protections, not only to codify Roe v. Wade, but the right to privacy. Reading the Dobbs decision, I'm very concerned about the implications. They attacked marriage equality, and I'm really proud of U.S. Senator Baldwin for leading on the Equality Act, and I'll continue to fight for that anytime there's a Republican threat, but they also attacked the right to privacy. And we need to take that seriously. We need experienced folks who understand that when it comes to abortion, it's always the individual's decision between their doctor, themselves, their faith, and their family, should they choose. It's not a politician's right or choice. And I have 100% pro-choice rating as a legislator who's been in the Capitol fighting against Republicans' attacks and extremism for 12 years. Derek Van Orden compared abortion to genocide. He also in 2020 said that he didn't support any exceptions, including rape, incest, and he told Pro-Life Wisconsin to get their unqualified endorsement that he supported personhood, which directly is an affront to IVF. In contrast, I'm a legislator who introduced and co-authored 12-month birth control bills so that you can get 12 months worth of birth control at the pharmacy, and a bill to cover fertility treatment, because people who have fertility issues shouldn't have to fight insurance companies to have a family. That's the approach that I will bring to Congress: holistic, comprehensive family planning and access to medical care for everybody.
All right, thank you. We will start this question with Eric Wilson. This question is about unions. Many good-paying union jobs have left the 3rd Congressional District. Union membership is down, and hostile policies in Wisconsin and nationwide have harmed worker rights. What is your opinion on these issues, and what would you do about them if you are elected?
We need to be protecting workers' rights. We need to be protecting people. The only thing that's going to fight back against big corporations is people and organizing. So it's the right to organizing. I come from a teaching family. My dad was in the teachers' union before it got broken up. And I understand what a good union gives to people. It allows us to buy houses. It allows us to have workers' rights. I wouldn't be able to work today if it weren't for unions and fighting for LGBTQ rights and fighting for everyone to have access to things. As we are fighting climate change, we also need to be making sure that in the laws we are drafting, that the jobs are union jobs. They're good paying jobs. And so as we are moving forward in infrastructure, in bringing back manufacturing, as Ro was talking about, integrating it with new technologies which are advancing, we need to protect workers, and we need to be making sure that unions have a place in our district and in our communities.
Thank you. Katrina Shanklin?
I grew up in a union household. It's how I became an organizer, because when I saw workers' rights under attack, I knew we all needed to fight back. And that's why I'm here today as a state legislator running for Congress, who's going to continue to fight for working families and seniors. And I know that unions are one of the greatest organizations, membership-driven, democratic, small d, to not only raise our wages and benefits, but also ensure that everyone has a voice and safety in the workplace. And I think that's crucial. I led the charge in the state capitol to repeal right to work, restore collective bargaining rights, restore prevailing wage laws, which are just as pivotal in Congress. And I will be a champion of not only the PRO Act, getting that done to make it easier to organize and join a union, but also other bills to restore collective bargaining rights to all employees across states, like Wisconsin, where Act 10, led by Scott Walker, who I stood up to, really hurt not only our public sector unions, but think about the kids in classrooms and the underfunding we've seen of our public schools. I've lived that with you, and we've fought together along the way, and that's why I'm running for Congress, to continue to be a voice for working people. It's why I have the endorsement of 12 labor unions for this campaign, and I'm incredibly proud to announce that that includes the AFL-CIO. So we're going to continue fighting for working families and seniors, and we're going to make sure that everyone has a voice in the workplace by enacting and enhancing worker protections in Congress.
Thank you, and Rebecca Cook.
So I grew up in a union family. My brother is a union firefighter down in Madison, and my sister works for the Teachers Union Education Minnesota. And I can't think of a bill that would change families' lives in western Wisconsin and around the country more than the PRO Act, which would undo the work that Scott Walker and his cronies did with Act 10. In addition to that, I support Davis-Bacon prevailing wage provisions. I want to ensure that every federal project that comes to this district has a project labor agreement attached to it. I'm also a big supporter of registered apprenticeship programs. We've seen IRAPs try to undermine our registered apprenticeship programs, and I've made a point while running for Congress this cycle to tour the laborers training facility, the painters training facility. Last cycle when I ran for Congress, I had the support of SDIU, painters, firefighters. This cycle I've received an endorsement from Communication Workers of America and postal workers, and I'm proud to have their backing and support. I'm a working class candidate. I'm working at a restaurant while I'm running for Congress 7 days a week. The tip minimum wage in Wisconsin is $2.33 an hour. So you can count on me also to get a federal minimum wage of $15 an hour passed when I get to Congress. This is unlike Derek Van Orden, who is absolutely not a friend to workers and is somebody that buddies up to folks like Scott Walker that have passed some of the most atrocious worker policies in our state.
Thank you. And just as a follow-up to this, we were just having a conversation earlier today about not just unions, but kind of outsourcing, and unions and outsourcing kind of go hand in hand with manufacturing. A lot of paper mills have closed in the third CD, along with foundries, other factory jobs. So starting with Eric, what would you do to bring good paying jobs to the third CD?
Yeah, it's continuing things like the CHIPS Act. I would be in support of making sure that we are continuing to meld both the technologies that we're advancing and the manufacturing jobs that we have here. I mean, it's new steels, it's new aluminums, it's using the foundation we have to rebuild the jobs that we can continue to support here. It's making sure that our communities have those. We took a misstep, in my opinion, and shipped a lot of jobs, and we have the ability to bring it back if we're willing to invest.
Thank you. Katrina Shanklin?
I appreciate this question. Living along the Wisconsin River, we know paper mills, and in the legislature, I started up a bipartisan paper caucus. Part of why I did that was I knew our paper mills along the Wisconsin were struggling because of global competition, and our workers, like the workers at Verso and Wisconsin Rapids, represented by the steel workers, were struggling. And I worked hard across the aisle to try to pass bills. We passed them through the assembly. The Senate didn't concur, to keep our paper mills' doors open and help them actually become worker-owned cooperatives, really localizing our jobs, making it impossible for local workers to outsource their own jobs to other countries, right? We own our future then, and I'm really proud of that work. We made it halfway. I'm gonna continue working on that in Congress, but I also wanna build on that, not just for supporting our local manufacturers, who I meet with frequently as a member of the legislature, and talk about workforce issues and how we can help. And workforce is their number one issue right now. So investing in higher education and technical education is an important part of that. But I also want to call out privatization. Here in Portage County, we are not alone in fighting forces that are trying to privatize our locally owned county nursing home. And that same issue, when we look at outsourcing of jobs versus privatizing local jobs, same problem. Lower wages, less control and oversight. I've been a champion on that issue. I fought 3 times to help protect our county-owned nursing home. I'm going to continue to work hard to protect our local jobs and grow them in Wisconsin and across the country.
Thank you. And Rebecca Cook.
Yeah, so for the last 7 years, I was really proud to run a small business that sold Made in America goods. So in particular, you know, pushing Buy America legislation, which are things that Senator Tammy Baldwin have put forth into Congress. But I think the other piece is, what are we doing to attract manufacturers to our communities? Like, how livable are our communities? Are we investing in our schools? Are we investing in our healthcare to try to do some talent and attraction to get some of these bigger corporations to want to headquarter in some of our smaller communities to build the kind of workforce that we need. And it talks, and that comes back to all the things we've been talking about tonight, from healthcare to housing to childcare. It's all these components if we want to try to reinvigorate our economies throughout Western Wisconsin.
Thank you. And we will move into our final question before our closing statements here. We will start with Katrina Shankland for this one. This one's about Social Security and Medicare. Republicans have signaled that they desire to cut Social Security and Medicare. If you are elected, what would you do to protect these programs?
I love this question. Thank you so much. Medicare and Social Security must be protected, but we also need to work hard to make the promise of them for future generations not only possible but achievable. As I travel across the third, I hear from a lot of people who don't think that when they retire, Social Security will be there for them. They're in their 30s and 40s. We can do better. People like Derek Van Orden and House Republicans are trying to slash Medicare and Social Security by 40% while raising the retirement age and then scapegoating seniors. Let's be clear. Everyone deserves to retire with dignity and economic security. I will be a champion on this because I've also championed retirement security in the Wisconsin State Legislature, working with and building a coalition of retired folks who wanted to mirror the Wisconsin retirement system and have a private plan similar. I know that we can build those coalitions to not only protect the promise of Medicare and Social Security, but expand it. So Social Security Works is a national organization that works on both of those issues. They don't typically endorse in Democratic primaries. They endorsed in this one because they know there's going to be very close margin should we flip the House, and they need Democrats they can trust 100% of the time to not only hold the line on Social Security and Medicare, but pass bills like the 2100 Social Security Act, paying Social Security into 2100 to protect the promise for future generations. That's who I am as a person. That's what I believe for all of you. I know we all deserve it, and we're going to fight like hell together to make that happen.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
So my parents are both on Medicare and Social Security, and they very much rely on both of those programs and that check to be able to get by. I'm a big proponent of expanding Medicare and Social Security, and in particular, I think that the Social Security cap, that it should be higher for higher earners to be paying into that system. From a Medicare perspective, I talked about this earlier about healthcare, expanding Medicare to cover vision, dental, and hearing, the very things that deteriorate as folks age. These are social safety nets, and I think it's important for us to fully fund them, to fully protect them. You look at how a society treats vulnerable populations or how a society treats their youngest populations or their oldest populations, and I think it's really a testament to what we care about. And to me, I care a lot about those parts of our society, and I have to think all of you in this room do too. But then you have far-right Republicans like Derek Van Orden who are looking to slash those programs, and it's unacceptable.
Thank you. And Eric Wilson.
I'm the youngest of 6. My dad actually retired before I got to high school, so I have been on Social Security. And I understand, having grown up with my dad, how people are dependent on Social Security. And it's not acceptable to say that we're just going to lift the cap or that we're going to shut it down. We need to lift the cap and get rid of it. I mean, everyone should be paying into the system that provides for our society and for our community. Elon Musk should not have to be done paying his tax 4 minutes into the year. Come on, we can do better. And so it's protecting Social Security. It's not only just expanding Medicare, it's pushing it all the way to make sure that we have the safety nets in place and that people have the healthcare that they need and they deserve. And so you will not find a bigger advocate than me in fighting for Medicare for all and making sure that we are protecting Social Security.
All right, thank you. So we move into our closing statements now. Reminder, this is 3 minutes that you have to address the crowd, and take it as an opportunity to address the community here about anything that we didn't cover during the forum today. So if there's any issues you want to touch on, feel free to use it as that or to provide context for earlier statements. I'm just going to randomly pick one.
Oh.
Katrina Shankland, you will go first.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and thanks for everybody who is a part of this very important forum. I am running for Congress because I know that we have a serious issue in Congress. It isn't just Derek Van Orden. It's the people like him who are creating chaos, creating more problems than solving them, fighting their constituents instead of fighting for us. And as a proven leader in the Wisconsin State Capitol, I know that I can help break up that noise and also be a voice for all of you to get things done in Congress. We need fearless leaders who have the experience to work across the aisle without compromising on our shared Wisconsin values. We need people who know exactly which lever to pull and when to get Roe v. Wade codified into law and to make sure that when we're fighting for clean drinking water, we're not forgetting about nitrate like, unfortunately, so many people do, but here in rural Wisconsin, we feel it every day. We need people who understand that running for Congress is a key part of not only making a difference by bringing people together, but also continuing to organize on issues to get things done in Congress. That's what I've always done as a statewide leader on issues like water quality and higher education, somebody who organizes to be effective. And that's why I've gotten 225 bills that I've either introduced, co-authored, or co-sponsored into law in 12 years. I've never served in the majority. What that means is I put my hand across the aisle every time for every bill I introduced. And I got things done like lowering the cost of epinephrine. We passed 3 different bills into law to do that. Protecting first responders. Expanding rural healthcare with our state's new community paramedic law. Passing 3 new laws to put more money into farmers' pockets to protect our soil and water and protect our water quality. I've also been a champion for issues like public education, which we didn't get into, but I would love to talk more about our public schools, as well as democracy. And look, I know democracy's on the line. That's why we're all here tonight. 2024 is important. It's existential in many ways. And we know that people like Derek Van Orden are not only unfit to serve in Congress because of his disqualifying temperament and character, but his extreme positions on issues like abortion, on issues like gutting the Affordable Care Act, Social Security, and Medicare. And we need people who are willing to stand up to extremists like him, but also reach across the aisle to get things done. When I say I can do that, you can trust me because I just did that for all of you for the last 12 years in the state capitol. And I'm so proud of the work we've all done together because those achievements were not done in a vacuum. We worked shoulder to shoulder building coalitions, organizing on the issues and winning. And we're gonna do so much more when we have a Congress who cares about us and a member of Congress who shows up at your town halls and listens first and then acts on your behalf. So I hope to earn your vote by August 13th, and I really welcome the conversation and continued campaigning, and really appreciate everybody for being here today.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
So I think if there's one thing that all of us can agree on here tonight, it's that Derek Van Orden has got to go. We've talked at length about how his policies are not right for folks here in West Central Wisconsin, and everything else is just plain embarrassing. I'm the person that's going to defeat Derek Van Orden. What sets me apart from folks here tonight are my lived experiences. So many of us have lost our farms. So many of us are struggling to pay our healthcare bills. So many of us have shuttered our small businesses, and so many of us are really living paycheck to paycheck. And when I'm out talking to voters around the district, I hear a lot of the same stories. I know that all together we're going to turn out Democratic voters in the general, but we've got to work to influence swing, moderate, and independent voters and find common ground to be able to flip the seat back to blue. When the seat opened up last cycle, it felt like a real opportunity to step up and to serve my community, and now it feels even more urgent. When I ran last cycle, I won 11 out of 19 counties and lost by just 8% of the vote, despite being significantly outspent. We won in population centers like Eau Claire and Portage County, but we also won in a lot of rural counties because we had a message that really resonated. This seat is one that's not going to be anointed, but that is going to be earned. That campaign allowed us to build a 19-county infrastructure across this district, and it also allowed me to build a profile that has helped us to garner the resources to combat the dark money that's going to be flowing in this district from far-right Republicans. And we won because of the working class message that we had. It helped to pull people off the sidelines to engage with my campaign. And I know we can flip the seat back to blue. I just know it in my heart. And I'm asking for you tonight for your support. I'm gonna need your help knocking on every door in this district, even if it's down a dirt road, writing postcards for some of you, having tough conversations, but those that I know that can really break through. Because we have to do this. We have to do this for our democracy and to bring some common sense leadership into this district. And I know that sending a homegrown leader like myself to Congress is the way to do that. So I'm looking forward to continuing to work with you all, looking forward to earning your vote August 13th, and also having your vote when it comes to November. So thank you.
Thank you. And last but not least, Eric Wilson.
We've heard a lot of things tonight, and we even agree on a few things. But there are some differences. There are some differences on the topics that we are willing to tackle. I'm the only one here that's willing to talk about gun violence and responsible gun ownership. I'm the only one that has called for a ceasefire. I'm the only one that's fighting for Medicare for all and standing with Tammy, standing with Elizabeth Warren, standing with Mark Pocan. I am going to be the progressive voice that is fighting for everyone and making sure that we all have a seat at the table. But I can't do that alone. If you align with my values, if we are fighting the same fight, I'm asking for your support. I need help with volunteering. I need help with knocking some doors. And I need help with donations. And so together, I am confident that we can go kick Derek Van Orden's ass.
Thank you. Thank you for participating tonight, candidates. I think we heard some really good answers, and we're fired up to kick DVO to the curb in November. I do want to thank William Garcia and the 3rd Congressional District Democrats, as well as the Portage County Democrats and Gary Hawley for organizing this event. I also want to thank the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point and Civic Media for helping us put this event together and hosting us. One thing I do want to remind you of before I... Oh, sorry.
Could all three of the candidates please state your website for the audience so they can check you out later?
That's a good point. Thank you.
Sure. So cookforwisconsin.com, all spelled out, and my last name has a silent E, so COOKE.
KatrinaForWisconsin.com, KATRINA.
WilsonForWisconsin.com. Across all socials as well.
Thank you. So one thing I do want to remind everybody here of is we do have a nomination paper signing event tomorrow from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Portage County Democratic headquarters down by Belts on Main Street. There will be candidates for State Assembly, State Senate. Tammy will have papers there, as well as congressional candidates and other offices, and President Biden, of course, as well. So if you want to come and sign some papers, thank you for that. And then do you want me to read this too? Okay, yes, and then we also, we were hosted by Civic Media tonight, so they're the ones kind of broadcasting this event. So is there anything else you want me to mention? Okay, we're good. So they have pamphlets here if you kind of want to see what else they engage in. They generally kind of engage in democratic events like this and trying to inform voters. So thank you for coming tonight, and feel free to mingle with the candidates if they stay afterwards and ask more questions. So thank you.
Join us on May 1st for another exclusive live broadcast of the 3rd Congressional District Forum featuring the Democratic primary candidates from the UW La Crosse Student Union Theater. You've been listening to this live broadcast on Civic Media.